He's
We're
right.
right here at Sharp Facets Gallery this afternoon. We're having a good afternoon, just about time to start talking about politics, politics, and more politics. We've got a lot of different issues we're going to discuss, and this afternoon my very special guest is Jennings Maccabee. He is running for House of Representatives District 12. Which, Jennings, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Ann. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, what does District 12 cover?
District 12 covers most of the city limits of Greenwood. It goes all the way out to Fuji, mm-hmm. Photo Film, comes back down both sides of Emerald Road, kind of circles around. Canyon Drive is in the district. And then it follows a bypass around basically 225 mm-hmm. and hits into 221. There's a little bit area south of that. It doesn't kick back in on the north side until you get down to Promised Land, but it goes on down through Bradley and Troy and all of McCormick County.
Hmm. Okay. So you have been in public office. You have run a couple of times since you were in there for a long time. And, you know, I just got to ask you, what has made you decide to run again?
Well, it was a number of things. I mean, the state's highways are crumbling, you know, every day. The General Assembly hadn't fixed that. Education was one of my priorities when I was in office and still is. And the Equal Finance Act, which I authored and got passed, was supposed to make all the school districts equal as far as funding, and the EIA.
Well, that came down as that, but that also was a federal mandate.
The EIA?
No, the one for schools, making all school districts equal.
Well, it was, you know, from Brown versus Board of Education back in 1954, but it didn't get enacted in South Carolina until the late 70s, and it set up a formula to distribute the money back to school districts. But they didn't fund it last year to the level that it should have been. As a matter of fact, it's $500 million short statewide. And, of course, that money is used to bring teacher salaries up to the southeastern average, which makes the competition, you know, with other states. It's difficult to compete if you don't pay the teachers. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes move to other states or rich districts.
Sure. Well, they've made some incentives, though, to help with teachers going and spending time in the districts maybe that aren't as popular to spend time in.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And that helps, you know, but it's still an overall situation. And you know, the Supreme Court ruled last year that they had to pass something, and the legislature kind of thumbed their noses at the Supreme Court and claimed that it was, you know, it was a separate branch of government and they had no business interfering in legislative matters. So they really didn't do anything along those lines. And as you probably know, one of my specialties was economic development and job creation. And I worked with Peter Arnotti back years ago to bring six major industries into Greenwood and two state prisons, one here in Greenwood, Leith, and one in McCormick, mm-hmm. McCormick Corrections. And all of those things had to do with creating jobs. And I've noted that 37% of the children in schools today in both Greenwood and McCormick are at or below the poverty level. And my impression of how do you resolve that is you create job opportunities for moms and dads so that they can get above that level and take the kids, you know, in a better home life.
Well, I understand that we pay quite a hefty sum to the Partnership Alliance to bring jobs into our area.
Yeah, and I've seen some results.
Right.
You know, from
that.
So
what can you make a difference that the Partnership Alliance, right now, of course, we have the 1 cent sales tax, and they're saying we don't have any buildings or anything that we can put out there to bring industry.
Well, certainly that's something that should be done. You've got to have a speculative building if you're going to be competitive with other areas because they're offering all kind of incentives. But I've got a real good connection with the Department of Commerce. As a matter of fact, I've known the director down there for over 40 years. He used to be with the Charleston News and Courier newspaper, and then when BMW came into the state, he, of course, moved up there. And by the way, I did the incentive package to bring BMW into South Carolina, and you can see what a blessing that it has been for all of the upstate, not just Greenville and Greer City.
And so was this a group effort when you brought this group in here?
When BMW
was that a group effort?
Yeah, I worked with the Department of Commerce, and yeah. They had a package of things that BMW felt like they needed in order to come to South Carolina. And, there have been other opportunities besides that. We missed out on a Mercedes plant that went to Alabama, but I was kind of heavily involved in doing that as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, which I served on for 20 years, and was floor leader for the budget. So,
now, what years were that you were actually in the House?
In the House. I was in the House from 1975 through skipping 1 year through 1998.
Okay. They always talk about how business has changed. Do you think business has changed?
Well,
getting businesses, bringing business. Do you think it's changed?
Well, it certainly has. Everything, changes. Nothing stands still, in my opinion. So you have to be able to meet those changes with new efforts to bring businesses in. I know when I was, trying to get a new grocery store, and we finally got one down in McCormick, a food line, I always thought that you courted the grocery chain. But that's not the way it's done. You court the developer who builds a building, and he brings the grocery chain in. So I learned, from that other companies are very similar to that, but they still expect incentives, and of course you get a return on the investment. You might have to give up a little bit in tax revenue and things of that nature, but the jobs created and the quality of things that are available for consumers kind of offsets that, in my opinion.
Yeah, sometimes it seems to me, though, Jennings, we talk about $1 million of expense bringing something in and then building and everything. And in today's world, that'll be 20 jobs. I mean, it just boggles my mind the number of jobs that are being brought in for huge amounts of incentives, huge amounts of investment on the company and everything. It does. I mean, today's paper, I think Pro Towels has just gotten a big grant to be able to expand and everything. Lots of dollars is great. How many jobs? 50. I mean, it just blows your mind, doesn't it?
I think you have to look at that, Ann, and I agree with you. I mean, we shouldn't be spending millions of dollars to bring in 20 or 30 jobs.
But we do.
But we do.
We do, yes.
And that's something government has to be a little more frugal with, in my opinion. Now, I don't, regret that Pro Towels was able to get a Farmer's Home grant, and that's basically what they got. But, it should be limited to number of jobs or based on total jobs instead of, and it used to be that way.
That's what I'm saying. It's so different because I guess the technology and everything else.
Sure.
But then of course there's always the question of the workforce. How well trained is the workforce?
Sure.
And what is it going to take to get the workforce? And of course, we here in South Carolina, we want to see our people get the jobs. But so many times they bring in people from other areas to fill those jobs.
Absolutely. And I think the marketing facility that Piedmont Tech is looking for out of this 1 cent sales tax will be a good example of we need to use that to train and attract industry as well.
Except it's really being built for one industry, right?
Well, I mean, that can be modified.
Mm-hmm. But it is being built for one industry.
That's correct.
Yes, at
no
this
question.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as you move forward, do you think there's certain types of industries that would be, let's say for McCormick, because McCormick has real issues with industry down there?
Always has.
What kind of industry do you think you could attract to McCormick?
Well, as you probably remember, I was a big mover in creating Savannah Lakes Village. And that is not an industry, but it has 600 jobs involved with it. And
sure.
It's the tax base went up 10 times what it was. So you have to be adaptable to what you have, you know, to offer. But any wood industry would be appropriate for there. Any tourism-related industry would be good for an area like McCormick.
Grace, that's enough. Thank you. She likes her woods. Hey, Gracie. Grace. Come on now.
But you know, we're diverse, and Greenwood is kind of the hub for all of the surrounding counties. Mm-hmm. And what's good for Greenwood's good for McCormick. What's good for Abbeville is good for Saluda and so on. We got a mobile population as far as workforce, and that's a good thing.
I mean, it is, but I know that there has been some push to try to get more industry down in that McCormick area.
Sure.
And it hasn't really panned out.
Well, the workforce is small, extremely small, and the kind of things that industry is looking for in the way of resources and, you know, workforce and things of that nature, at this time, they're simply not there. So you have to be adaptable and use other incentives in order to, you know, gain ground with industrial recruitment.
So what does that mean?
Well, I mean, you got to use the tools that are available.
So what you're saying is the possibility of getting industry down into McCormick is not real likely. It is more likely that it would come into the Greenwood area and people would have to drive back and forth.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And you know, Fuji's a good example of that. There are a number of people in McCormick that work at Fuji. You know, Westinghouse, some of these other plants that came into here. There were people from McCormick that drove up here. And, you know, if you can't, you know, get something that's good for one area, certainly another area would be receptive and it would be good for everyone concerned. I mean, I think we are all, you know, we're not a worldwide market, but we're certainly a county by county market for anything that we can put together to bring in.
What type of industry do you think then is good for Greenwood? What type of things would you like to see coming this way? I mean, we certainly have enough restaurants. I mean, truthfully, we have enough restaurants in Greenwood. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree with you more, but I enjoy it. And I go to, you know, a number of those restaurants. And
sure.
I enjoy, you know, being on the road for that 20 or 30 minutes. And, you know, it's good thinking time and good working time. And I have
you're talking about from McCormick to Greenwood.
All back.
Right.
But, you know, it's a good thing. I mean, we want to bring in things, sure, but we don't want to disturb the quality of life issues that we have either. I mean, I think
one of the big issues is how do we keep our young people here?
Well,
so many young people are leaving.
So true.
Yeah.
No question about it. And that's, again, that's because of lack of opportunity and lack of training that our young people are having to move. And the school populations in some areas of these counties, Greenwood and surrounding counties, is dropping for that very reason, because they don't have opportunities at home. And that's a frustrating thing to me, to watch kids graduate from high school, or for that matter, from college, and not have a place that they can find a job to feed their families.
Well, too, though, I mean, you know, do you think we're going to attract the tech type of jobs that that a lot of our young people are so passionate about getting?
Sure. I think there are possibilities.
Coming to Greenwood?
Yeah. I think there are possibilities with that. I mean, look at the Genetic Center and what it's done for Greenwood. And
absolutely.
And it's growing by leaps and bounds. I remember back in 1976 when I first went on the Ways and Means Committee, Dr. Stevenson came down to Columbia, and he says, if you can get me $50,000, I can find a cure for five children that otherwise would have to go into an institution. I made the case to the committee. They granted the $50,000. He found more than the five children that would have cost the state five times that $50,000. And, you know, it benefits everyone. And they're still doing some great things out there.
Well, it's become a campus now.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it used to be just a really sick couple of buildings there. And now
sure.
It's turning into a campus. And, of course, with Clemson coming down into this area
sure.
and the industry that they're hoping to attract to the campus there, it will be huge.
Sure.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm supportive of things like that because it's good for everyone. You know, it's good for the kids. That I know they're putting buses out now and going to high schools all over the state to show the seniors and the sophomores and the juniors what they're doing at the genetics center to see if they can get kids interested in going into that field. And, I mean, it's on the threshold of good things to come.
Sure, absolutely. But you mentioned the roads. The roads has been an issue that they've been dealing with for the last several years. There seems to be a big aversion to a increase in the gas tax, even though we have one of the lowest in the country. What would be your proposal in order to do this? Now, last year they did put some funds into it. We do have the bank that puts funding out there. They're doing a lot of work on checking inside the Department of Transportation to try to figure out whether they are being efficient in everything. I happen to know Christy Hall. I know she's a good person. I think they put a good person in charge there. But what do you think about getting the funding and the amount of time that it's going to take us to do it? And what is the best way to do it? Governor Nikki Haley said that she would only do something that was revenue neutral, so she would not increase a gas tax, even though that might be the quickest way to raise revenue. What would be your proposal?
Well, my proposal doesn't raise the gas tax, and therefore you don't have to worry about the governor's proposal at all. What I would like to do, and I hadn't put the finishing touches on a plan yet, but I believe if the General Assembly would use last year's revenue as a base for the new year's budget, last year they had an increase in revenue of $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
They spent that on various and sundry other things, but if they use last year's revenue as a basis for the new one, that could potentially free up somewhere between $500 million and $1 billion that could be used for those purposes. Could be used for education purposes, that unfunded situation I was talking about before. And it also would protect our state's AAA credit rating. And that's important for consumers that borrow money, you know, to build a house or to buy a house, because that state's AAA credit rating affects the percentage that the banks offer on loans for all these other purposes.
But yes, but as far as getting the funds into for fixing the roads and the bridges, how would you go about doing it?
Well,
I understand the budget. Actually, the budget that they made, then they've had a shortfall, and they're talking about having to cut stuff out of the budget because they don't have enough money.
Well, the shortfall was minimal, and if they hadn't overspent that $1 billion increase, you know, they wouldn't be facing this situation. But you can simply direct the money by proviso in the budget. I've done that, you know, many times when I was in office. Directing the highway department to do this with this amount of money. It's a fairly simple thing now.
Well, if it's so simple, Jennings, why hasn't it been done? Because I hadn't been in office. Whoa. So if you're in office,
right.
We got everything taken care of.
Well, I'm going to try to take care
of
everything.
I mean, that's one person out of how many in the House?
124.
Okay.
But I did okay when I was there.
Yeah. But
as one out of 124.
Okay.
I found that the members of the legislature, if you give them a concrete proposal and you have a trust with them, they'll go along with reasonable packages.
Were you down there last year when all this stuff was going on? Did you go down and sit there in the and watch some of this activity?
I went down one time, and I watched when they were trying to build a prison system over at John Delahaye School. I went in support of the children of John Delahaye because that's a place that's near and dear to me.
Well, that's a different topic. Let's talk about that. Have you seen the House work together to do something? They had a lot of discussion, a lot of animosity. The Senate last year has been called slow as molasses. They can't seem to get anything done.
Well, they just need to have the right leadership, Ann, and I think I can provide that.
Oh, okay. So that is the crux of this. You can go down there and give them the right leadership.
I think so.
You think so?
I really think so.
Okay. All right. Hey, we are talking with Jennings Maccabee here this afternoon. We're going to come right back. Don't you got away. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing this afternoon? I'm Ann Eller. We are here with Jennings Maccabee. He's been in the House before. He wants to go back to the House, and he has been campaigning pretty hard for this, haven't you, Jennings?
I really have, Ann. And, you know, I want to do as much as I can in the next couple of weeks with ads and meeting people one-on-one. I enjoy doing that. It's a real joy to me to help people with their problems and listen to people's problems.
What is actually the duty of a representative?
Well, of course, the first duty is to go to Columbia and pass laws and vote on the issues.
Pass laws? Well, nah. Pass laws? We don't want any more laws, Jennings. We're done with laws.
Well, let me tell you along those lines. One year, I kind of agree with you. I put in a bill that did away with all the laws so we could start over. Of course, it didn't get out of committee.
Well, I think that's an excellent one.
Well, you know, and besides the laws, there are regulations that these agencies have the right to bring to the General Assembly. And if you don't act on them within so many days, they become law, just like the laws of the General Assembly. But being a representative is more than that. You know, I worked hard to create jobs and to do other things in addition to that, local issues and what have you. I enjoy working with people. People come to me all the time with problems with state agencies and sometimes local agencies, and I try to help them with those. I answer my phone. I return my calls. So I think that's part of being a responsible representative.
Now, what do you think, though? I mean, let's see. Next year, they are going to shorten the session. It takes a lot of time to go down there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 days a week for really from January usually through June. And then there's all the committee work that is extra and goes on throughout the year.
Sure. Well, Ann, if the whole thing is predicated on when the budget passes both houses.
And that's always at the last minute, Jennings.
I understand that. But if the Ways and Means started earlier, say they start, and I have been down there in October and November, starting on the next year's budget. But if they start.
They do start. I mean, yeah. I know they do. Mike Pitts.
But if they start early enough and they put the budget on the floor that first week and the budget can go through and then be sent to the Senate, then it would be easier to cut that month off. But without doing that and without having the other committees meet, that's the way Georgia and North Carolina do it. Their committees meet when they're not in session. Mm-hmm. But without doing that to prep for when you actually get on the House floor, I don't see how they can do it with a month less than they had the year before. Look at last year.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. And every year it seems to run right down to the
end. And the governor had to call them back, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So as you go forward here, one of the things, of course, is what is happening at John Dillahow. They have, I think John Dillahow is a sad example of being left alone with no real oversight. And I think that caused a lot of the problems that they had down there.
Well, you could say that if you want. You're dealing with a different type of child. John Dillahow, at first, in his will, provided for 12 poor boys and 12 poor girls from Abbeville District. And, of course, in 1797, that district went from the Savannah River all the way over to the Saluda River in Columbia. Of course, it's been divided since then. There have been a number of court decisions since then, but the type of child that Dillahow envisioned being helped is different from an at-risk youth. At-risk youth almost demands one-on-one counseling from both the house parents, the teachers, and the counselors in the family counseling center. I think they've gotten a bad rap in a number of ways. If you look at the total number of kids that have gone through Dillahow in a year, it's up over 200. But at any one time, you might not have but 50 or 60, you know, on campus. But
sure.
The goal is to get the child straightened out enough where they can put the child back in the home environment, and hopefully he can function there. Most of the kids that come there are either from DSS or juvenile justice. And, you know, the amendment that my opponent put in transferred all of their budget to juvenile justice. In other words, in my opinion, made a juvenile prison out of that. And I'm not sure that has been resolved. There's even been some talk about taking Hickory Knob and making that dormitory space out of Hickory Knob for the prisoners. And that's frightening.
Well, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I mean, they'll have a golf course.
Why not? Yeah. Life is supposed to be good when you're being taken care of by the government.
But that shows you what's going on in Columbia. And it shows you, you know, John Dillahow is special to me. It has been all my life. As a matter of fact, I learned how to swim in the pool up there when we didn't have one. But, you know, they've gotten a bad rap. Do they need to do more? Of course.
Well, I think what I was referring to when I was talking about the money situation, they were given money and there was not real oversight on what was happening with the money. And I think that's where some of the problems started.
Well, it could be. I mean, the Board of Trustees has a responsibility to look at all of that. But we have mostly new board members now. We got some new board members that are coming on. And I think that issue will resolve itself. Is it going to resolve itself overnight? No.
And I think when you looked at the dollars per child, it was way out of proportion what it should have been at the time.
And it was not out of proportion to other similar institutions in the Southeast.
They put out a lot of facts and figures that showed that they were really spending a lot more money.
You can stretch facts and figures to work any way you want them to. You can make it look good or you can make it look bad. But I'm telling you, I have looked at all of that situation. And, you know, there have been claims that the situation has resolved itself. It has not. They're still under direct proviso from the Senate that is not any better, in my opinion, than the one my opponent put in the House. As a matter of fact, that proviso gave the Senate the incentive to do almost the same thing. The only difference is they leave the board in place and they left a budget with John Dillahow. But they're going to bring kids in from juvenile justice in Columbia, 19 to 25-year-olds. And how in the world can you do that?
Why would they bring 19 to 25 when John Dillahow was not for that age group, was it?
No, it was not.
Okay.
And the proviso states, though, that the Senate put in that you would get children aging out of foster care or out of the juvenile justice system. that is kids from 19 to 25 year olds, and that's where that comes from. But I mean, we got a child care center there on campus that takes in kids from 6 months old to 10 or 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. And I've interviewed some of the people from down there. I've interviewed the people that were there before the people that are there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, in my opinion, you can't put a 19 to 25 year old gang member, and that's usually when they go to juvenile justice, what causes that, on the same campus within yards of a child care institution. You know, you just simply can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, you know, if nothing else, the courts would rule that they're changing Dr. Dullahow's will by going in this new direction. I would hope so. And
well,
I just
so
hope.
What would be what you would try to implement?
I'd like to go back to the old system and get the kids that are having functional difficulties living in homes, poor kids. There are some 2,000 or 3,000 kids in the state that are actually have no roof over their heads. They're either living with someone else in not the best of circumstances, or they're living on the street. And that's the type of child that I would like to see go back there. I'd like to see the agricultural programs be reinstituted, have them grow crops. You know, used to have a dairy barn. I'm not saying, well, to bring dairy barn back, but the kids could grow crops. They could cut hay, you know, and sell it. There are opportunities. They could charge tuition, possibly two, for some kids that the parents don't have anywhere else to send them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too good a thing, in my opinion, to let it just die. And that's what would happen if they put juvenile justice children there. I'm for saving the children that are there now,
mm-hmm.
and the wilderness program, which is one of the best programs in the United States, really. It's 85% effective. And I've seen the tears stream down those kids' faces and say, I don't know what would have happened to me if I had not come into this wilderness program. But to give you another example, one of the 15-year-old girls up there, and I'm on the foundation board at Dullahow, came up to me when they were talking about putting the kids, existing kids, in foster care. And she said, Mr. McAbee, what's going to happen to me? And that just tore my heart out. You know, that was one of the big incentives
mm-hmm.
for running again because, you know, and it's all because the rest of the legislators will listen to the local legislator and do what they said. And unfortunately, she got up on the House floor and spoke in favor of this amendment.
And the amendment to do what?
To take the budget away and to put in kids from the criminal justice system.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that'll be an issue to discuss another day then. So now, as far as the education of the students that are down there.
Right now, they have a contract with the McCormick School District to come under their umbrella. And that will be in effect until they choose a new group to come in and take over the whole operation. I don't know what the new group will choose to do. I think this will work, and it's necessary to do it this way so the kids can get credit for mm-hmm. the programs that they're taking. Do they have all certified teachers? No, they don't. And I would like to see them move toward getting certified teachers so they wouldn't have that dilemma, you know, facing them. But
What about the condition of the buildings and everything?
The condition's rough because they haven't really been able to afford – you know, a lot of things. Some of the roofs are leaking, even the chapel. The auditorium is leaking. They just got through fixing the cafeteria. Every time it rained, they had to come in and put buckets in the floor. The cottages were in terrible shape, but they've got, I think, 10 out of the 12 cottages renovated now. But, you know, it's not going to get, you know, it didn't get that way overnight.
I guess that, you know, I think that's some of the frustration for people is the fact that a lot of money was spent down there and it didn't go for the things it should have been going for. Well, I agree. I mean, the renovations have gone, that they've let the place
run slow.
Down. Yes.
They've been slow.
Well, they've let it run down. I mean, well, yeah, they have.
They've asked for money, but it hadn't been granted every time, you know, to do the renovations with.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's contingent on legislative funding, you know. They don't have a printing press.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it's not like the federal government. If they granted the money, I'm sure they would make the repairs.
Yeah. Well, it is a shame because it, when you look at the history of John Dillahoe and what it has done in the past, it is a shame that it is in the, I guess we could use the word, the shambles that it is right now.
219-year history.
Yeah. Pretty big history. So we've talked on economic. We've talked a little bit about the roads. We've talked about John Dillahoe. What else did you want to talk about?
Well, you know, the state retirees pension system is got to have some adjustments made to it. There's a good bit of unfunded liability. Now, of course, everybody can't retire at the same time, and
I think after this election, you're going to see a lot of people wanting to put in their papers to retire there with Jennings.
Well, I hope not. I'm optimistic.
Okay.
That things are going to get better, and I've always been that way. And I, you know, I like to think that we're going through a cycle, and that cycle is going to move upwards instead of downwards. I think we're on the bottom now, and it's going up. But I'd like to be part of that process.
And, so what are you thinking about the retirement then? What are you saying about?
Well, I mean, it's going to take some adjustments the system. There are five different retirement systems. It's mm-hmm. complex. There's one for the judges. There's one for the regular state employees. There's one for the teachers. There's one for law enforcement. And there's one for legislative. And not all of them are unfunded.
Okay.
But some of them are going to have to be looked at. And maybe some, increased contributions either from the state or from the employees to stabilize what Wall Street is looking at now as a concern.
Well, I do know that that's the treasurer, Curtis Loftus, has been screaming about that for years now.
Sure he has.
And about how they spend their money and what they pay in fees for the return that they get on their investment.
Well, you know, we hadn't exactly been in an economic windfall since 2009.
Right.
And the investments are not bringing in what was anticipated.
Sure.
And that's been a contributing factor. And maybe we need to make some adjustments to where the money's invested as well. Now, I understand the police officer's retirement system is in good shape. And, and I'm sure the legislative section is in good shape.
Oh, I'm sure.
The judges probably is. So
yes.
We've got to look at the teacher's retirement system, and we've got to look at the state employee's retirement system.
And then, of course, that brings us to the health care. There's another issue for you.
No question about that.
Health care, you know, whether it's for state employees or for those that are trying to survive with Obamacare.
Oh, no question. You know, when I was there, and I played a big part in state employee pay raises, and it seemed like there for a while, every time we gave a pay raise, the health care costs would go up, and they would actually lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't let that happen. I mean, you know, the employees that are there for the most part are dedicated, and they deserve, you know, to be compensated for what they do. But if you compare their salaries with salaries in the private sector, they're grossly.
Well, now we've gone from retirement to talking about, and that Governor Haley, I think, they're already talking about the fact that there will be no money in the budget to pay for employee raises this year.
Well, let me ask you this question. What if they get another $1 billion increase in revenue?
I think they're thinking that they won't have that.
Well,
but I mean, I haven't had a raise in years. I'll be perfectly frank.
Well,
and that's just the way it goes, folks.
I understand that. But government is a little bit different from the private sector. And
absolutely.
I've been in both.
Yeah.
I've been in both. But I have no reason to believe with the economy improving, and I think it will after we get through all this dirty national politics. I think the economy will improve and the revenues will increase.
Now, let me ask you something.
I majored in economics.
You majored in economics. Okay, that's good. But now, who are you voting for president?
I promised both Hillary and Trump that I wouldn't get involved in their campaigns if they didn't get involved in mine.
Well, I'm pretty sure they don't give a hoot's butt about yours there, Jennings.
Well, maybe I don't give a hoot about theirs either.
But I mean, you know, I will say this. I think that whatever way it goes, it's going to take the public a pretty good while to believe in either one coming into office. I think it's pretty much damaged, and I think depending on way this election goes, if a lot of people that are in office are not returned to office, whether it be on the federal or the state level, it could potentially shake up things. And what is going to happen if all the Trump supporters don't? If he doesn't make it into office, well, you know, I don't know. It could be a very interesting time. So you say business is going to get better. I'm not so sure.
Well, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Absolutely.
But the main concern that I have right now is the Supreme Court nominees.
Yes.
And I would like to get some conservative people on the Supreme Court so the Supreme Court will not try to amend the Constitution with their decisions or make new laws with their decisions.
Well, then I guess we got your answer. Okay, moving right along here, Jennings Maccabee running for District 12. And I want to give you a couple of minutes to tell the folks why you should be elected to District 12.
Well, thank you, Ann. I now appreciate this opportunity to be with you today, and I appreciate all you listeners out there. As I mentioned, my main platform is economic development, creation of jobs, and education, not necessarily in that order. But there hasn't been funding adequate to take care of the educational needs of the state, and I'm concerned about the John Dolezal situation, mainly for the children, because they're the ones that are going to lose in that situation that they're in. And the employees up there are going to be in that kind of situation. We've got a number of issues. The highways, you know, need to be addressed. The state employee pension plan needs to be addressed. And I just think I'm in a better position to do that. I've always been fair and just, and I'll continue to be. I don't really care too much about political parties. I care about people. And as long as I'm in public office, I'll take care of people first, and the parties will come second. Thank you. I'd be honored to have you vote.
There you go. I was wondering if you were going to say it there, Jenny. Well, this has been an interesting conversation, as it always is, right here on WCRS. What, let's see, you're going to be at the Citizens for Better Government Forum tonight at 7 o'clock?
That's right. Yeah. And Monday night at Lander College at 5 o'clock in the Cultural Center Auditorium. And Tuesday night at the Light of Life Church in McCormick on Highway 28.
Okay, so plenty of opportunity to see you. And Jennings, what's your telephone number?
It's 378-6864.
6864. So 378-6864. I guess you'd like to tell the folks if they have questions, they can give you a call?
Absolutely. I'm on that phone 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I'd appreciate it if you'd leave me alone from 2 to 4 in the morning. But other than that, I'm okay.
You're okay. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming out and sharing your positions and everything. And we'll see how this all turns out in just 2 weeks from today. That's when the voting is. 2 weeks from today. Isn't that amazing?
Time goes by.
It does go by. So make sure you are out there tonight at the forum. Make sure you're checking out and becoming educated on the issues. And make sure when November 8th gets here, if not before, that you vote. Hey, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. I'm Ann Eller. Bye-bye, everybody.